Welcome in. This is going to be one of the more consequential shows that we've ever done. It's time for a 49ers therapy session, probably a therapy session first, and a reaction second to a day that will never be remembered happily in 49ers history. That's how I opened my article up on the San Francisco Standard. Regardless of what happens moving forward, even if the 49ers quickly follow this with several massive victories and even that elusive sixth Super Bowl title, March 10th is not going to be a happy day in franchise history. At best, it's going to be an emblem of the ruthless business side of the NFL, which is obviously a part of the sport. But on a human level, it is never easy to say goodbye to people, to memories, so many of them created by the 49ers players who are moving on to different teams. And the news of that became official today. Dre Greenlaw with his stop on Jacob Hollister in 2019 at Seattle, a massive moment in 49ers history. Talanoa Hufanga delivering in short sleeves and negative 10-degree weather at Green Bay, the scoop and the score to beat the Green Bay Packers in the wild card round. And the most recent news to close today, Kyle Juszczyk will be released by the 49ers, and he'll be headed to another team. At age 33, he wants to continue playing. And I think that we all remember this, Juszczyk flattening Minkah Fitzpatrick. This is week three of the 2019 season, a magical 2019 season for the 49ers when they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. So today marks a ceremonious or an unceremonious end to an era of 49ers football. And, you know, I could write about strategy all that I want. And I did write about the strategy. The article of the San Francisco Standard is up on the screen right now, and it's available in the description of the YouTube video. It's also available up on X. I was able to post it there. And we could talk about strategy until the cows come home, but sometimes the nostalgia is still flowing too hard, and you're not really ready to talk about the hope moving forward. I could understand this from a fan's perspective because everything is a little bit too fresh. I think that this line or a couple paragraphs summarizes it as best as I can. It's a state of limbo that's emblematic of what the 49ers are as a franchise after this callous day of attrition. Memories of the past, like Juszczyk's flattening of a hapless Pittsburgh safety, that was Minkah Fitzpatrick in 2019, or Greenlaw's epic stand at the goal line in Seattle to close that season, have flooded back, but not in a particularly happy way, at least not yet. The separation is too fresh, the nostalgia is too strong, and any relieving sense of renewal hasn't yet arrived. The 49ers' recent past has been ripped from their present, and entering day two of free agency, their future is up in the air, just like Minkah Fitzpatrick was back in week three of 2019. And I think the ending there, and again, go and read it. I hope you have time to sit down and read my article. I put a lot into it up on the San Francisco Standard. I had to take my time, put the right words to the moment, because this is obviously a very consequential moment. It's a turning of the page for the 49ers. And we can talk about the ruthlessness of it and the necessity of it and the plan moving forward. But again, we can't get to that point until we acknowledge the emotion of it, right? And the past eight seasons just come flooding back. Kyle Juszczyk was the longest tenured 49er. So when Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch came aboard looking much younger than they do right now, it has been, the ups and downs have been wild over the course of the past nearly decade at this point. When they first came aboard, though, around January of 2017, February 2017, their first free agent class. So it was this day, essentially, but 2017, 8 years ago, they brought in a bunch of new guys, a bunch of veteran signings to help turn around the culture of a team that had gone 2-14 the year before. And as Kyle Shanahan told Jed York, had the worst roster that he had ever seen in the NFL. Shanahan inherited a terrible roster. That's part of what got him the job in the interview. He was incredibly forthright with Jed York. And Kyle Juszczyk was up on that stage. I started covering the 49ers in 2017. That right behind me is when the YouTube channel started, 2021, the Frank Gore jersey. But 2017 is when I first started covering this team. And I can tell you that as a young reporter in an NFL locker room for a first time, it is extremely intimidating. I mean, you're in an NFL locker room, and I was, you know, 2017, I wasn't even 30 years old yet. So this is a new level. College football was one thing. I was covering Stanford and the Pac-12 before that. Everything in college football is more protected too. You're not really going into the locker room. You're dealing with players through sports information directors and just media relations people in college football. The NFL, pro football is a whole different world. You're stepping into that locker room, you're face to face with these players, you're having to build relationships with NFL guys. So you could just imagine from my perspective as a reporter that was in an NFL locker room for the first time, you're looking for a lifeline. You're nervous to talk to people. It's a whole new setting. And I remember just not knowing much about how the NFL worked on a procedural basis. I had obviously watched the 49ers growing up, and I obviously watched on TV, but it's a whole different thing to cover the NFL. And I can tell you that Kyle Juszczyk was probably the person in that locker room that helped acclimate me the most to the National Football League. Every single question, he would give you an honest answer. It'd be a welcoming interview. And sometimes that's not easy to find, especially as the young guy in the room. And he would continue to do so even though the 49ers lost their first 8 or 9 games. I didn't cover a win until the 49ers beat the New York Giants. I believe they're 0-9 at the time. And Kyle Juszczyk was there front and center for most of that time. Now, there was a 2-week stretch that he missed in that 2018 season that underlined just how tough this guy is. I'll get into that in a little bit, because I think that a lot of times people just view this as a budget line, right? They're like, all right, they move on from this player, they save a little bit of money, and then they just trudge forward, and they don't realize what these guys go through on a physical level. I keep on saying today that it's a gladiatorial sport, and it really is. Just wait until what we talk about regarding Kyle Juszczyk moving forward. But I just have to say that I remember those times in 2017, and I realize how much has happened since then. And then so a day like today, you don't just like stop and say, oh, this is all strategy. You know, that's what I was initially writing today. It was like, yeah, the 49ers are making these moves. We have expected most of them. And I can't lie, we did expect most of these moves. The 49ers, we've been talking about this strategy now for months and really in detail over the past 10 days, 2 weeks or so since the NFL Combine. So it's not like this comes as a massive shock on the surface, but it still is a huge shock to the system as it happens, because you remember this. George Kittle posted this up on Instagram. This is the first day that these two guys took the field together in 2017. So Kyle Juszczyk was a free agent addition, the longest tenured 49er, still officially the longest tenured 49er. They're not going to release him until Wednesday. But Kyle Juszczyk was the free agent addition, and George Kittle was the young fifth-round draft pick. Juszczyk joined the team about 6 weeks ahead of George Kittle. These, as of right now, before the Juszczyk release is official, I could even see DJ Jones in the background, by the way. I'm circling him there with my cursor. But these two players are the longest tenured 49ers and the only 49ers to date back to 2017. On the roster. Ronald Blair is now in the coaching staff. He was a 2017 player for San Francisco. But you look at this and you see how young they look, first of all. I mean, it just reminds you of the memories since 2017. you know, how they were able to turn things around at the end of that season. And then they sunk back into the pit of despair in 2018, 4-12. And then the big turnaround in 2019, this was part of that in 2019. The Juszczyk play against Minka Fitzpatrick later that season. I wrote about this. This was huge from Dre Greenlaw against the Seattle Seahawks to clinch the number one seed. And that led to the Super Bowl eventually, and it led to a whole lot of heartbreak. I think that makes this era all that more profound for the 49ers, because let's be honest, like, people will always remember the highest triumphs, but the lowest lows, and those happen very close to the highest highs in the NFL, because you don't feel all that low, I feel, after a 3-13 season. But you feel really low because you're already numb at that point. But you feel really low. I could speak for fans, I think. You could tell me if I'm right or wrong here. You feel really low after an NFC championship game loss or a Super Bowl loss, right? Like, that is the worst feeling in the world. It's like you got your heart ripped out of your chest, and, you know, feels like your gut is completely empty. You know, you're dry heaving. It's terrible. You know, as a sports fan, losing a massive game is the most painful feeling that there is. It's worse than mediocrity. It's worse than being downright terrible. I mean, every competitor will tell you that it's worth it to go through that pain because you'd rather compete at the highest level, but it is still much more visceral when you lose that massive game. And the 49ers lost Super Bowl 54 in 2019. They lost the NFC Championship game in 2021. They lost the NFC Championship game in 2022. They lost the Super Bowl in 2023. So there have been so many of these visceral moments, you know, that followed the elation of winning the NFC Championship in 2019. This Dre Greenlaw play against the Seattle Seahawks in 2019. The 2021 wins against the Rams, and then against the Cowboys, and then against the Packers. The 2022 run, the 10-game or 13-game win streak, however long it was. It seemed like forever after trading for Christian McCaffrey. The 2023 tear, which was Brock Purdy coming back from the elbow injury, and what the 49ers did to the league before beating the Packers and the Lions. I mean, you had all these highs and then all these lows, and they were just so mind-numbingly close together that it's just created this insane mosaic, and then all the memories just come flooding back on a day like today. To recap, the 49ers have released or plan to release Kyle Juszczyk. The 49ers are moving on from Dre Greenlaw. They did not outbid Denver. 3 years, $35 million for Dre Greenlaw with the Denver Broncos. Talanoa Hufanga, an All-Pro, is also heading to the Denver Broncos. So he joins the guy in the background of this photo right here. Just happens to be a nice little cameo for DJ Jones, who's re-signed with Denver. That's an old friend of the 49ers. Hasn't been around since 2021. Charvarius Ward, big part of the 49ers locker room, came in to fix the pass defense in 2022. He's headed to the Colts. He's going to be the seventh highest paid cornerback in football. Aaron Banks, great guy in the locker room. He's leaving to a big offensive line deal with the Green Bay Packers. $77 million for Aaron Banks, $19.2 million per year. And, you know, as I go through all of these monetary numbers, everything makes, again, complete sense from a business perspective. But it's more than just business, because we're dealing with humans, obviously dealing with fans who are emotionally attached to this. And right now, this is definitely one of those days that just will never be looked at as a happy day, even if it leads to really good 49ers results moving forward. Now, the business bright side of this, and this is the ruthless approach the 49ers have to take, this guy took this approach as well. I just happen to have this book laying here. I saw it. Bill Walsh, he would always try to release a player a year too early rather than a year too late. He tried not to form bonds that were too close with his players, because he knew that ultimately in this league, it's a young man's game. You were going to have to turn the page and move forward. Now, that was before the salary cap was a thing, But, you know, a lot of this is cash spend. It's not just cap spend for the 49ers, but there's a little bit of both at play here. The fulcrum that we're seeing right now that is being approached, like the shift in balance has been what we've been talking about over the course of the past couple of weeks. And this dates back a couple months, and it dates back an entire year. Ever since Brock Purdy started playing really good football for the 49ers, you knew that the day, the inflection point was coming at some point, right? You knew that Brock Purdy was going to at some point sign a new contract that would make it fundamentally different for the 49ers. We've seen this happen to essentially every team in the history of football since the salary cap became a thing. The 49ers dissolved completely dynastically after the late 1990s run. They did not land gracefully on their feet. This iteration of the 49ers is going to try to more gracefully stick the landing, the way that the Philadelphia Eagles have gracefully stuck the landing, the way that the Los Angeles Rams seem to be gracefully sticking the landing. I think the Rams and the Eagles offer the best model for San Francisco moving forward. So the future right now is in complete limbo, because we look at the 49ers roster and the roster is filled with holes. This is always the tricky part. You leave day one of free agency and everybody wants to have their reactions after day one of free agency. And yes, of course, there should be emotional reactions right now. That's completely normal because there's a lot of emotional ties to a lot of the players who are going to be leaving the 49ers building officially on Wednesday. But when we look at it from a strategic point of view, a team is never built. No Super Bowls have ever been won on day one of free agency. So we're in this weird kind of limbo, which is what I tried to capture in the article. We're in that weird kind of limbo where the future is completely up in the air. There's this mix of business and emotion right now that's just swelling about. And the separation is too fresh and the nostalgia is too strong without any relief from future hope to really move forward. So that's why I called the 49ers therapy session for all the fans, all the viewers. Everybody, thanks for watching. Everybody, thanks for joining the channel. I really do appreciate you guys being here as we talk through what's next. According to Mike Silver, Joey Bosa has got a couple offers on the table, one from the Dolphins, one from the 49ers. That is going to be the next part of this saga. Will Joey Bosa join his brother, become teammates with Nick Bosa for the first time since their days at St. Thomas Aquinas High School in Fort Lauderdale? Or is Joey Bosa going to stay closer to home in Florida? We knew that this offseason was going to be fascinating. Now it's actually hitting. And boy, some of the permutations that this can possibly take are mind-numbing to me. Going through some of the news from earlier today, I mean, we've talked about Luke Farrell and the 49ers additions and the fact that they've, you know, seen players sign for over $250 million combined dollars elsewhere today. But there's been other news. It looks like the Rams are probably going to release Cooper Kupp. They're having trouble finding a trade partner willing to take on his salary, $19.8 million, 32-year-old receiver. If they release Cooper Kupp, the 49ers might definitely be in play because they're looking for a veteran receiver, and it looks like Cooper Kupp is not valued at $19 million, valued at a little bit less, and the 49ers definitely have opened up some money on both the cap spend side and the cash spend side. But a couple other names, Larry Ogunjobi and Dalvin Tomlinson, pair of defensive tackles, who I think are better fits for the 49ers than somebody like Jonathan Allen, because the whole point of the defensive restructure here for San Francisco is a reaction to the fact that the run defense has fallen off a cliff for the 49ers over the course of the past 2 years, all the way down to number 29. Dalvin Tomlinson especially is a very, very good run defender. He's been around the league, knows the tricks inside to combat the run. I mean, we talk about Joey Bosa in that way as well. Also a good run defender for the 49ers. So those two players, they're emblematic of some of the holes that the 49ers can begin to fill when day two of free agency hits tomorrow. I've tried to reflect my roster in a way that illustrates where the holes are. Obviously, there is nothing right now at fullback because Kyle Juszczyk's no longer going to be on the team. They have to add a backup quarterback. That could be Jameis Winston. The 49ers in conversations with him. I mean, don't discount the possibility of a Brandon Ayuk trade. If the 49ers are truly cleaning house for full cost efficiency, they did leave an out in Brandon Ayuk's contract to trade him. The problem is he tore his ACL, so it's going to be a little bit harder to utilize that out. You continue going through here. I mean, the receiver needs more. Debo Samuel's no longer there. It's not lost on me that Debo Samuel and Dre Greenlaw both entered the league the same year after the 49ers discovered both of them while coaching the 2019 Senior Bowl. There's definitely a poetic symmetry there. So they enter the league the same year and they leave the 49ers about 2 weeks apart, Debo Samuel and Dre Greenlaw. We go back to the roster and we see tight end has added Luke Farrell. So that's a position where the 49ers don't need to add imminently. But offensive line, I think that the goal is to add an offensive tackle in this offseason. The draft would be a dream for the 49ers if they could find somebody like Armon Membu. But the chances that he drops down to 11 probably aren't too high. You've seen what offensive tackles are going for on the open market, though. You're seeing what guards are going for on the open market. I mean, Aaron Banks, what, $19.2 million? The 49ers are replacing him with Ben Barch, who played better than Aaron Banks in very limited time last year. They'll be replacing him with Ben Barch in all likelihood at about a 19th of the cost, maybe an 18th of the cost, $1.1, $1.2 million for Ben Barch. But they decided not to go after Drew Dahlman. Apparently they like Jake Brendel. Maybe they're going to let Matt Hennessy compete with him. That's obviously a move that I've questioned in the past, but nothing on the offensive line front from the 49ers today. Another holes at defensive tackle. I think Dalvin Tomlinson, Larry Ogunjobi would look really good filling this hole. We'll see what they do with Jordan Elliott. We know the 49ers are planning to release Malik Collins. That's what's created this hole. They're trying to get better run defenders on this defense. Then there's the linebacker spot next to Fred Warner. Dre Greenlaw will not be filling that. Is D. Winters going to slide into it, or are the 49ers going to add another player? And then we look at the defensive backfield. Yes, they added Trey Tomlinson. Maybe Trey will be in that nickelback spot. Maybe they could leave the Amador Lenore on the outside, but I'm not sure yet. I'm leaving Trey Tomlinson as a reserve after they claimed him off waivers from the Rams. I haven't yet slotted him into the 49ers nickelback spot. Somebody let me know that Debo Samuel's still a kick returner here. I'm going to remove Debo Samuel as a kick returner. We could just put Ricky Pearsall or somebody back there instead. That was a mistake on my part. Maybe Jacob Cowing, not Jacob Cowing. I don't know. We'll see how the 49ers build the roster, but I've just removed the last link to Debo Samuel on there. That's a look for you guys inside the roster and how the 49ers must reconstruct it moving forward. So anyway, that's the gist of the day. The 49ers made three signings today. They added a tight end, Luke Farrell. We should all obviously update the sheet with that. The tight end, Luke Farrell, has joined the 49ers. They re-signed Patrick Taylor Jr. And I'd be remiss to not have Kevin Givens listed on this depth chart. But Kevin Givens, even though he's been around since 2019, is a depth piece on this defensive line. There he is. So I'm not slotting him into the starting spot at this point. Mike is asking me if I should remove the fullback spot from the roster. And let me go to my article to explain why Mike is asking this question. This is up on the San Francisco Standard. Again, go check this out. It's in the description. If there's anything that you should read regarding the 49ers, if you want something to capture the emotional tenor of what's going on of this big day, this is the piece that you should be reading. But there's Kittle, there's Juszczyk. We go down here and we see the discussion, and let me make this big up on the screen so we can really start talking X's and O's. Because I talked about this in the morning when the 49ers first signed Luke Farrell, and I wondered, okay, this guy does some of the stuff that Kyle Juszczyk does on film. I was wondering this morning, is there going to be a corresponding move? Because we know the 49ers were noncommittal about Juszczyk's future. And it turns out that, yes, the corresponding move was releasing Kyle Juszczyk. But Farrell is a blocking specialist who will help replace Juszczyk, a player tasked with critically difficult run blocks over his 8 seasons with the team. The 49ers faced unusual struggles on the ground in 2024, ranking number 20 in first down run efficiency and number 31 in short yardage situations, in large part due to auxiliary blocking issues opposite Kittle. Farrell, who's set to make roughly $6.5 million annually, will likely be asked to fill that gap while also helping usher the offense away from its 21 personnel, which is 2 running backs and 1 tight end, with Juszczyk, to a 12, which is 1 running back and 2 tight ends base package that better suits Brock Purdy's skill set. Brock Purdy was thrown to a lot of tight ends at Iowa State. When Brock first showed up at Iowa State, it was more of a receiving-focused offense, like a wide receiver-focused offense. Over his time there, they really wanted to attack the seams of the field with Brock Purdy because he was really good at those timing throws. As time progressed with Brock at Iowa State, they started recruiting more and more tight ends. Charlie Kolar was one of the tight ends, and they're running a lot of 2 tight end stuff for the Cyclones. The 49ers have not really been comfortable running a whole lot of 2 tight end stuff because they haven't had the second tight end to do it alongside George Kittle. They've tried. They went through the draft. There was a year they drafted both Cam Lotu and Braden Willis, And it didn't work. Like, they didn't get the production that they needed to. I know that Willis is still around, but they haven't gotten the pop that they need to be comfortable running a lot of these 2 tight end sets. So Juszczyk, while he's been on the team, has been somewhat of a Swiss Army knife. He's all over the field. And they've been running more 21 than 12. They ran 12 at Iowa State. So tailoring stuff around Brock Purdy would involve 12, but the 49ers have been running 21. Now that you are able to turn the page with this addition to Luke Farrell, you're much more capable of running 12, but I think that the 49ers will try to have their cake and eat it too by asking Luke Farrell to do some of the stuff that Kyle Juszczyk did. And that's going to be really hard. That's a tough ask, but they think that Luke Farrell could do it. So he is 6'5". Juszczyk is what? 6'1", 6'2"? Juszczyk is significantly shorter. Lower center of gravity, easier to make some of those cross-formational blocks against defensive ends, actually, when you are shorter. The appeal of Luke Farrell is that they think that he's such a good blocker that he can do some of this stuff even at 6'5". Maybe not at the volume that Kyle Juszczyk did over the past 8 years, but enough to be able to transition away from what they've been running into these new personnel packages. So they still hope that that adaptability from Juszczyk will be there in Farrell, but it's just going to be more tight end facing than fullback facing, if that makes sense. Because there is no individual position in this offense. Every position has to run block. Every position has to catch. There are no dedicated positions that are 100% pushed in on one responsibility. But there are degrees to things, right? So you could say that wide receiver one, the X wide receiver is out, you know, on a pass pattern 70% of the time, run blocking 30% of the time. You know, you could say it's a 70-30 split there, but for Juszczyk, it might've been more like a 40-60 split. That guy's blocking more. For George Kittle, it's a different split, and you're trying to make the offense as amorphous as possible. So I think they still want versatility, but the versatility is obviously going to be a little bit more tight end facing moving forward. So Mike's question was, do you want to remove the fullback position from the roster? I would like to talk to Kyle Shanahan about this first before I remove this from the roster, because we'll see if the 49ers are going to run with the fullback or if it's going to be all Luke Farrell at that tight end position. There's a good chance that we do remove fullback from the roster. And if we do, then this will simply be a another running back spot because the 49ers are going to carry four, maybe even five backs on the football team. But for now, I'm going to keep it out of respect to Kyle Juszczyk. We'll keep it at the fullback spot for the 49ers. I think that's a really good question, though, from Mike. Do I think that releasing Juszczyk might be an opportunity to draft Tyler Warren? Well, not really, since they just signed Luke Farrell to significant money. So I think that, I mean, if Tyler Warren is there somehow at 11, then the 49ers are just in best player available mode. I mean, maybe, but and then you would think that Farrell goes into the Juszczyk role. I don't know how that would work. I think that the 49ers made this move thinking that that first round pick is going either toward an offensive tackle or a defensive player. So defense being the most likely, because it's hard to find an offensive tackle slipping down to number 11. So I don't think that a Tyler Warren change here for the 49ers is particularly likely. So, you know, I get a lot of questions like this. You got to wait more than one day of free agency to see what the 49ers are doing. I have to continue emphasizing that the best path forward in the long run for any football team is cost efficiency. But there are humans involved in this, and when you do rip the Band-Aid off, it's going to hurt. But you don't have any idea how the 49ers are going to be constructing this moving forward. At least you don't have a detailed idea of that. So, I mean, there's a very good chance the offense is better next year. If they're going to be stronger in 12 personnel, if they can find a receiver and a tight end here who's a bigger part of what they're doing in the auxiliary blocking game. I know we talk about the fact that the 49ers were number 20 in first down run efficiency. They're number 31 in third and short efficiency last year. I mean, this team had a lot of problems running the football. There's a good chance they can be better offensively next year. It just depends on how they construct teams. And there really is nowhere to go but up defensively. They finished number 29 against the run, number 26 overall defensively. So running it back was not an option. If you run it back with how bad they were defensively last year, even if you're healthy, The foundation was rotted of the defense. They needed that defensively. They needed to turn this over, and that's what they've decided to do. Cost efficiency is the right way to do it because the performance wasn't even good when you poured all the money into it last year. But you know, a lot of people are sitting and stewing in the 2021, 2022, 2023 nostalgia and acting like pouring more money into the problem is just going to make the 49ers suddenly better in 2025, where I think 2024 made it clear that the returns were already diminishing for the 49ers. So they have to be ruthless with their efficiency moving forward. They have to be ruthless with the reset moving forward. You rip the Band-Aid off. That's how you do things. That's how this guy did things. That's how these teams stayed relevant for so long. And that's how the 49ers have to be acting as they move forward. You hope that one of the recent rivals like the Chiefs, Eagles, Rams, and as much as you hate to say it, Dallas don't win the Super Bowl in Levi's. That would be tough for the 49ers. But like I said, let free agency, let the draft play out. I think all this makes it all the more important that the 49ers hit on the 2025 draft. It makes it mandatory. Tim Kawakami wrote a great article up on the San Francisco Standard saying, okay, now it is time. The 49ers absolutely must hit on the 2025 draft class. They hit on 2024. They've got to hit again. And if you hit on two in a row, the reset looks a lot like the Rams' successful reset. Could look a lot like the Eagles' successful reset. Good teams reset. That's how you work with lowering cash spend, working under the cap. That's how the salary cap works in this league. So many people don't understand the salary cap, the nuances, and then they don't even consider the business aspect from the cash spend side. So they kind of ignore the maneuverings of the successful teams. And then they you know, just start crying out when their own team is starting to do some of this shuffling. But we've seen a lot of similar maneuvers in LA and with the Philadelphia Eagles, also with the Buffalo Bills. This is a misunderstanding of the cap right now. 49ers have the highest dead cap in the NFL. No, that does not tell us what you think it tells us. Dead money is simply money that's already been paid to a player that the 49ers artificially chose to push into the future so they could splurge more in the present. They're going to have to hit and pay that cap bill at some point. So dead money is just them shouldering the money this year. Dead money actually means that you're willing to move off of decisions that you no longer want to entertain moving forward. And it's better to move off of something too soon rather than too late. I'd almost be more wary of a team with no dead money than a team with some dead money, because a team with no dead money is just riding all these contracts into the dirt and they're not really finding the most near-term efficiency. So dead money is really misunderstood. And the 49ers, anytime you see a total of the 49ers dead money, that's not a really good way to gauge how they're running the football team. Sunk cost fallacy. Look that up. All right, Eric, I think you're being a little bit dramatic. The 49ers are not going to end like the Sacramento Kings and never make it back. This is still a marquee franchise that has poured probably more money into its payroll than any other team over the course of the past 8 years. Objectively is a time for a reset. And again, that reset doesn't mean that the team is going to be bad. It didn't mean that in LA. It didn't mean that with the Eagles. It's about management and it's about pulling in the same direction. If Lynch, Shanahan, Parag Marathe, and Jed York stay on the same page, if they hold the line and stay on the same page, and a lot of that is up to John Lynch, that's what I talked about this weekend, then the 49ers can come through this fine. As tough as today is. I have to give you, Kyle Juszczyk, the salute that I promised we would give him at the start of the show. So Kyle Juszczyk is tough. To illustrate how tough he is, this is a story that he shared with me back in, I think, 2017. I've been covering the team for a while. In, I believe it was week four, 2017, at Indianapolis, Kyle Juszczyk broke two transverse processes, which are bony protrusions from the back of your vertebrae. So he had two fractures in his back. He fractured a rib and he suffered a hematoma on his psoas muscle, which is around the lower back. He didn't realize that anything was broken. So Juszczyk, with the help of a therapeutic corset that treated his back with heat on the sideline, played the entire game with two fractures on his back, a fracture on his rib, and a hematoma on his lower back. The flight home was so painful and the damage to Juszczyk's back was so bad that doctors sent him to stay in the hospital the night after the 49ers returned to the Bay Area. These guys are tough. I think that they deserve some appreciation. Again, there's going to be a lot of talk as if these guys are just lines on a spreadsheet. That's not the case. I mean, I learned a lot from Kyle Juszczyk over my time, the 49ers locker rooms. I already sent him a message. You know, I said, thank you for everything over the time. I grew up as a reporter covering the 49ers over these past 8 years with him in the locker room. And there've been a lot of great personalities in there, and there still are. From Richard Sherman was in there, Trent Williams still in there. Of course, we talk about George Kittle. I could go through the list of names, but Kyle Juszczyk was at the top of the list as far as helpfulness and just class in the 49ers locker room. He really set a standard. It's going to be hard to replace that leadership for San Francisco, but this is a gamble that they have to take at some point. And that is what they've decided collectively as leadership moving forward. Today, a particularly rough day in that process. Again, up on the standard. Regardless of what happens moving forward, even if the future is quickly filled with massive wins and that elusive thick Super Bowl trophy, March 10th will not be remembered as a cheerful day in 49ers history. The franchise, dead set on its ruthless efficiency reset, has parted ways with several of its fixtures that included fullback Kyle Juszczyk, the longest tenured 49er, and similarly beloved linebacker Dre Greenlaw. We'll finish where we started with that photo and here. It's a state of limbo that the 49ers are in. We'll see what happens with Joey Bosa. The limbo waiting for Joey Bosa is evocative of the state of limbo that the 49ers are on right now. Emblematic of where the 49ers are as a franchise after a callous day of attrition. Memories of the past, like Juszczyk's flattening of a hapless Pittsburgh safety, or Greenlaw's 2019 epic stand at the goal line in Seattle to close that season. Those memories have all flooded back, but not in a particularly happy way, at least not yet. The separation is too fresh. The nostalgia is too strong, and any relieving sense of renewal has not yet arrived. The 49ers' recent past has been ripped from their present, and entering day two of free agency, their future is up in the air. Everybody have a good night. I appreciate you guys joining. Thanks for this round of 49ers reaction and 49ers therapy for you. We'll be back at it for day two of free agency tomorrow as the 49ers, after stripping this down to the studs, attempt the retooling process.